Blog Talk Radio.
Change has come to America. Our moment is now. Yes, we can.
To commemorate the inauguration of our 44th president with a well-known American icon, introducing
Chia.
Chia Obama. This Chia Obama is a special edition and a collector's item. Just spread the seeds, water, and watch it grow. Your Chia Obama is a symbol of liberty, opportunity, prosperity, and hope. Visit ChiaObama.com. Order from home. Send one to a friend. Chia Obama makes the statement, "I'm proud to be an American." Display it on your desk, in your home, at your school. Show pride and support with Chia Obama. Order now. Go to ChiaObama.com.
CommunicationCreations.com presents
Larry Ballard and the Empire of Evil. With your hosts, Mike Hammer and Dolly Miller Brennan.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Mike Hammer here with Dolly Miller Brennan and the star of the show here, Larry Ballard, who's going to fill us in on what the Empire Evil actually means. And yeah, that little thing you heard coming in about the Chia Obama, that's a real thing. It's an actual commercial. But I thought it was so funny, I just had to play it. So what's going on, everybody? How are we doing tonight?
Doing good.
Good. How are you, Mike?
Doing good, Larry. How are you? How's everybody's good. Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful.
Excellent.
How was yours, Michael?
Awesome. I just chilled out. I hid from everybody.
Don't
give me
any
days off, so I went to hide.
Well, I understand tonight that, as everybody knows, Larry Ballard, I think, is listening to us. If Larry would introduce himself again a little bit for our guests that are listening. And Larry was in the healthcare profession for many years, and I also was in healthcare management. And now we hear a lot in the news about the Obama healthcare plan. And my question to Larry is, you know, they think government influence or the government control of healthcare is new, but it isn't really new. It's just legalized that the government has been controlling healthcare and our options and making our decisions for us for years. Now they can expand this and create a legally sanctioned system. Is that correct, Larry, and what your research is showing?
Yeah, actually, that is correct. I mean, basically, what they're doing with the Obama plan that's different than what they've done in the past is the Obama plan is really a political issue. They've really hijacked one-sixth of the U.S. GDP, and the whole strategy of the Obama administration, which I don't really want to regurgitate all over tonight, but it's basically to control all of the things in life that are essential for survival. And so healthcare is one of those things, and so that's why they've passed the Obamacare. But long before that, we really find that healthcare has fallen within the same empire of evil that the Federal Reserve has fallen in, and it's actually controlled by the same financial elite that are controlling our government in the form of the shadow government that we've been talking about on past shows. And so I thought it might be interesting to us if we talked about basically the evolution of medicine in the United States and how it's denied us wellness and led us into a situation where literally millions and millions of Americans have, in my opinion, been killed and tortured by a medical system that was not designed to heal them, but was designed to keep them sick perpetually.
And this, of course, is to make money. And if the government has control or in collusion with the banking interest, the pharmaceutical interest, then we find that the government then can have control actually over issues of life and death and require us to engage in practices that are really detrimental to our health. Is that correct?
Well, I, in my opinion, it goes even beyond that. I mean, what I believe the government has done here is they have denied us, literally denied us, access to things that would save our lives. Let me take you through a little bit of the history so you can see that it fits in with what we've been talking about in the political arena. So let's go back and kind of go back to the beginning of the 19th century and look at how medicine evolved in this country. And you'll see that there was a very definite divergence where the American Medical Association took over and took us down the path that we've now gone down towards allopathic medicine. So in the 19th century, there were effectively two very viable choices: allopathic medicine, which was the treatment that used pharmakia, and basically holistic medicine, which was the approach that said, let's look at the body as a unified front, and if it's out of balance in some fashion, let's try to restore that balance. And if we do that, we believe we can restore wellness, because the fact of illness, in their opinion, just simply comes from a state of imbalance. And so what was happening is the homeopaths were winning. The allopaths had really, how I put this, they had some treatments that were quite bizarre. Maybe the most famous one that I know of was George Washington. Do either of you have any idea how George Washington actually died after surviving several bullets through his clothing when he was in battle and being
wasn't
finally
George
saved
Washington, he
die.
Kind of suffocated to death, or he lost so much blood that could have been corrected? Is that correct?
Well, you're close. You're close. He had a sore
He's
throat.
Also got a chin head.
Pardon me?
He also has a Shia head.
Along
with President Obama. Okay. He really does. Him and Lincoln and the Statue of Liberty and Obama, they have Shia heads.
Sure they do.
Well, anyway, what happened to him is he had a sore throat. It was probably strep throat. And so the allopaths were called in, not the homeopaths. And what they did was something that had been done for ages. They bled him. So they bled a large amount of blood out of him, and come the following morning, he was still quite ill, and he was weak. And so they gave him, according to everything that I know, the second most toxic substance in the world, other than a radioactive substance. They gave him mercury. And
did you know
the mercury killed him.
I had wooden false teeth.
Pardon me?
George Washington
did it
had
again?
Wooden false teeth.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. But what killed him was he was weakened by the bleeding, but what killed him is they gave him mercury. So back then they didn't really do any testing to find out what was efficacious or not. But what happened was that as modern science began to evolve, they saw that the money people, J.D. Rockefeller, who we've heard of before, and we've talked about him in our other shows, and how him and Morgan and several others were behind the financial elite and headed the banks and so forth, he stepped in and he saw to it that the favor fell in favor of the allopaths instead of the homeopaths, because as modern medicine began to evolve, the whole basis of pharmakia began to evolve, and he saw that there was huge money to be made in artificial medicines as opposed to no money being made in holistic medicine, because you couldn't patent it. And so basically he came in and he founded and put the money behind, if you will, the American Medical Association. And I worked in healthcare. Just a little bit of background for those people listening. I am not a doctor, and in the instance of this show, that's a good thing, because if you go to your doctor and after you listen to this show, you believe that anything we've said here has credence, then I want you to ask him a question. I want you to ask him, when you went to medical school, doctor, how much training were you given in anything holistic? How much training were you given in diet? And the answer is going to be absolutely nothing. Maybe one course, maybe 3 hours, that's it. They've been taught to basically prescribe medicines. So they don't really know about holistic healing or about anything, because the allopaths have taken over, the homeopaths are all but gone. And how it happened is, with the advent of Rockefeller, he formed the American Medical Association, which is the most powerful union in the world. And now think about what's happening today when we've got the progressives taking over the universities, right? Well, what they did, what John D. Rockefeller saw made happen, is he went in and he put his money behind the American Medical Association, and they changed the curriculum in the university so it favored allopaths. Then what they did is they changed the licensing procedures so that all of a sudden homeopaths were just kind of squeezed out. And then they've got a regulation that says that no disease can be treated are cured with anything other than a medicine. Well, a medicine is a foreign substance, and it does exactly the opposite of what the founder of medicine did. So does anybody kind of remember I'm probably going to pronounce his name wrong, Hippocrates, and what the Hippocratic Oath was about, and what he had to say about medicine?
Oh, Hippocrates.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what he said?
No, tell
him. Do no harm. He said, do no harm, and that he said, let your food be your medicine, and your medicine be your food. So he was basically espousing natural cures. But what they saw to it was that was not what was going to happen. So now with Rockefeller in there, with the money in there, all the laws were changed, and now it comes down. And I basically experimented with my own doctor about 3 months ago to make sure that what I was reading was true. Basically what I did is I went to my doctor and I said, I have a very, very close friend, doctor, who has cancer. And, you know, I've done a lot of reading, and I've also been in the healthcare field for 22 years. I used to sell radiation therapy equipment. I've been in surgeries. I've seen them do mastectomies, and I've seen patients come back and have reoccurrences of cancer and over and over and over again. And so I said, I've recommended to this friend of mine that they look into food as a cure for their cancer. Can you give me some comments on that? And here's what he said. He said, if I were to tell you that your friend should go and get a treatment that was other than what was recommended by the American Medical Association, I could lose my license and I could go to jail. And the only three treatments that are allowed are surgery, radiation therapy, and chemotherapy. So what I'd like to do is have us talk a little bit about each of those and why the success rates of those modalities is almost zero. And to give you some examples, how would you define a cure for a disease?
Well, first we have to prevent it, and then we have it cured. My late husband, God bless him, when he had cancer, homeopathic medicine was not approved by his insurance, so therefore he was not allowed any options to homeopathic medicine unless you had lots of money and you paid for it yourself. He underwent chemotherapy, and his cancer actually grew at an alarming rate during the chemotherapy process. In addition, what that did to him, it just destroyed other cells in his body and his ability to recover. So we had. So I understand the situation there. As I see it, the government
chemotherapy actually destroys your immune system.
It destroyed everything, and it destroyed totally everything in his body. So as I see it, the government has been in control of the American Medical Association in coordination with them, and through their control, they have left us options where insurance companies are regulated. They cannot pay for these options, and now they're saying we will have our own health care plan, is how I see it, and we will legalize what we're telling you to do. We will legalize forbidding you to have anything like this. You can't buy it with your own money. We are going to forbid them to practice. Therefore, the government is in control of life and death. This is what I see happening, 1984.
Well, they've already done it. Basically, my own physician confirmed. He said, if I were to tell you to advise a patient to do anything other than have surgery, radiation therapy, or chemotherapy, I could lose my license and go to jail. And then what I was getting at a second ago was the definition of a cure. To me, okay, you got a disease, but if that disease is cured, it means it goes away and it never comes back. Wouldn't that be what you would consider to be a reasonable definition of a cure?
Well, of course.
Definition of a cure from the dictionary. Well, I was in radiation therapy for years. That's not the definition that the American Cancer Society gives. By the way, before I get into that, I want to go back to something you said a second ago, Dolly. Remember we had the American Medical Association set up as the most powerful union in the world by J.D. Rockefeller, but also the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, the American public naively believed that that functions to protect us. But yet it has granted 40 highly toxic, and I'll get into some of the side effects of some of the chemotherapy in a few minutes, but it has granted the approval of 40 chemotherapy drugs and never granted or even investigated the possibility of a holistic cure. Now, let me ask you why. Here's the reason. Here's the answer. I'll answer it for you. The FDA receives 50% of their funding from guess where? Drug.
Federal government, of course.
So the drug companies, the actual pharmaceutical companies, and the pharmaceutical companies, just like our health care bill and just like the stimulus bill, they are allowed to write their own protocols, which are used to determine the efficacy of the drug that they are getting approved, and they're receiving 50% of the funding. The FDA is receiving 50% of the funding from the very companies that are going to get their drugs approved. If that isn't collusion, I don't know what is. And then you've got the American Cancer Association, American Cancer Society, and I've got some quotes that I'll try to dig out here as we're talking, but basically they're here. Maybe a story is the thing I do in that case. There is the Gerson Institute, which I want to talk about at some length in a minute, but basically Dr. Gerson ended up being poisoned to death almost 50 years ago after he had thousands of people who were cured of cancer by putting them on an all-natural diet of live foods that were not cooked, that had all the natural enzymes in them and everything to create homeostasis in the body. He published a book with 50 detailed case histories of cancer cures, and in the process he was poisoned with arsenic. He survived the first attempt and got his manuscript out and then was finally killed, and his daughter finally took up the cause. But basically the American Cancer Association is, as we'll discuss here, is not here to help us cure people. They're in collusion with the FDA and the American Medical Association. And here's my example. Down at the Gerson Institute, which, by the way, had to leave the United States and go to Mexico because they were not allowed to have holistic cures, I came across a case. I don't remember the name of the lady, but she had been to Mayo Clinic. She had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and her physician came to her and said, In our practice here at Mayo Clinic, we have never seen a patient survive the particular cancer that you have. When discovered in stage 4, go home and prepare to die. There's nothing we can do. What we can do is we can extend your life briefly by doing surgery and by giving you chemotherapy, and you may live a few months longer. Well, that patient didn't like that because she was going to die anyway and have to go through a lot of agony from going through chemotherapy. She ended up down at the Gerson Institute, and she was cured. She was cured. She went back to Mayo, and she took her records from Mayo showing the original diagnosis from Mayo Hospital, then took her records from the cure from Gerson Clinic, and she went to Mayo, and she went to her original doctor, and she said, I would like, for the benefit of other cancer patients in the United States of America, to have you attest that Mayo Clinic diagnosed me with this cancer, told me that it was incurable, and I've now come back and shown you documentation that shows that I am cured, and you have tested me and shown that I'm cancer-free. The doctor was willing to do that. Then what happened is Mayo Clinic's administration got involved and said, no, we can't let you go public with that. And the lady was escorted out of the hospital under a police escort, and Mayo Clinic refused to in any way acknowledge what had happened. The doctor quit the hospital, And there we have the example, I think, of all examples of how the entire medical system is participating in a mass murder and torture of Americans for profit.
Okay, so what we can see here, what I'm trying to coordinate here, is the Obama health care plan. Under that, this lady would not have had the option to go to another clinic, to go to another country. And if you don't take this plan that's in collusion with the American Medical Association, you're going to be fined. So I see this as just a, now it's legally sanctioned. It's actually forbidden now. There is a chance you can get through it. And perhaps the government just doesn't want sick people.
Well, it's always been illegal. I mean, basically, what they're doing with the Obama health care plan now is they're controlling their access to health care. I think they're more targeting the elderly, because what they're going to do is whether regardless of what they say, they are going to look at the relative value. If you are a very small infant and you are very, very ill, they may say it doesn't warrant it to spend the money on certain treatments. If you're an elderly, say 65, 70, 75, they're going to say we're not warranted to spend that money. So if you're in the 20 to 40 range and you're in your prime, then they're going to spend the money. That's what's going to come out of the healthcare program. But in the instance of cancer, none of the insurance companies have covered holistic healing. And the American Medical Association has clearly said, you cannot. You'll go to jail, doctor, if you do anything other than surgery, chemotherapy, or radiation therapy. So what's happened is these people have lost the sanctity of their own bodies and have had to go out of the country to Mexico or to Europe in order to get treatment. And there are literally thousands of examples of people who have been cured from cancer, but they had to leave this country in order to do it. And so what I'm hoping to have happen tonight is have people understand that, so that if a person gets cancer, there may be another story. I went to the post office when I got home from Thanksgiving. I was out of town, and I met a lady at the post office who was a postal employee, and she was bald, so I knew she was undergoing treatment for cancer. We had a little conversation, and my soul was saddened. Here's what happened. She says, I have stage 4 cancer. I'm completing my chemotherapy. I'm only able to work a few days a week because it makes me so sick. I had cancer previously. It's come back, and I'm being treated. So I tried to say to her, okay, ma'am, finish your therapy treatment, but then I would recommend that you go on a website, and I gave her some information. I said, do some research. I think that, you know, there are better alternatives than what you're doing. And here's unfortunately what happened. She looked at me with great skepticism because when I was working in healthcare, another one of the propagandas that they've done is they've indoctrinated us so that we think of doctors almost as gods. And so her doctor told her, she believed what her doctor said, she didn't investigate alternatives, and she's going down this path. And interestingly enough, this is the second time. So I want to go back to something we were talking about before, which is what is the definition of a cure? And I really want to talk about the whole process of cancer, because basically what they do to us is just outlandish. When most people get cancer, they're told you have to get treated immediately. You have to get surgery, and you have to get chemotherapy, and you have to get whatever modality they recommend immediately, because the cancer is going to kill you if you don't do it. Well, I want to bring forth a little bit of real information for people to think about so that they don't just rush in. You have time. So here's the first piece of information. Your body naturally kills cancer cells. Everybody listening to this broadcast has cancer cells floating in their body right now. The pancreas is designed to kill those cancer cells. But here's what happens. They've done laboratory studies. They've unfortunately not been published in this country, but they have been published abroad. And what they found is that the diets that we have adapted over the last 100 years are actually contributing to our increase in cancer. And what the cause is excess animal protein in our body, which is dead protein, unlike the protein you would get from live vegetables. And one of the studies that I read said that they took mice and injected them with a a very volatile carcinogen that would give them liver cancer, and they divided the rats into two categories. One category received food that was high in animal protein, and the other group received food that was high in vegetable protein. And what they found in a double-blind study was that 100% of the rats that received the high animal protein developed liver cancer and died. And
so
even though they had
are we saying we should eliminate meat?
That's what the Gerson therapy is about. There are other therapies, and when we get to the end, I'll kind of give you kind of a recap of some of the possibilities. But that's what the Gerson therapy is about. It's about eliminating meat and going to whole foods. And I'll tell you, kind of try to walk you through why. So
I think it's okay to eat meat as long as you eat your broccoli and your roughage.
What?
I mean, say that again.
I think it's okay to eat meat as long as you eat broccoli and other types of roughage.
Well, no. I'll tell you, it's way more complicated than that, Mike. So 100% of the rats that got the protein from vegetables did not get the disease. And then they did studies that look at it from a global population of human beings around the world, and I'll give you some examples. The Okinawans, for example, live in a highly polluted environment, exposed to a lot of carcinogens, and they happen to smoke as a per capita more than any other species, any other group in the world, and yet their incidence of cancer is very, very low. Well, what they found was once they started having a Western diet, once they got started eating the hamburgers and the French fries and so forth, all of a sudden their resistance to cancer was gone, and they started getting cancer rates that were more indicative of the rest of the world. So what did that tell us? We can take a carcinogen into our body, but if our body is working correctly, our body will fight that, and we will not get cancer. So here's the key to it. The pancreas is designed to kill cancer cells. But when we eat too much meat protein, the pancreas has to work overtime, just like if it's with sugar, the adrenal gland has to work overtime in order to process that protein. Because what happens is the cancer cells are coated in a thin membrane of protein, and our immune system does not recognize that cancer cell as long as it's got that membrane of protein on it, and so it can basically come through the system undetected and not be killed. So when we eat too much protein, we overwork the pancreas. The pancreas lets some of those cancer cells through. So if we don't overwork the pancreas by having less protein in our diet, less animal protein at any rate, now the pancreas works more efficiently. And what the pancreas does is it strips the protein coating off of the cancer cell. So now it is immediately visible to the white blood cells. The white blood cells kill the cancer, and you don't actually get cancer, even though you have cancer cells in your body. Now let's go to the growth and the lie that the doctors are telling them. Maybe they don't know it as a lie, but it really is, let's say, incorrect information. The average cancer, when detected, and they call it early detection, is actually about 10 years old. If you get one cancer cell, in 90 days it'll spread and it'll be two cancer cells. And in about 5 years, it's roughly 1 million cancer cells. And in 10 years, it's roughly 4 million cancer cells. Well, that's about the point at which we start to see a tumor. And then here's what happens. Now we've got this tumor, and we go in, and with modern medicine, we cut that tumor site out. So basically we go in, and let's say it's in the breast, we cut it out. Now here's the problem. Once you touch that cancer with a knife, that cancer is very likely to spread. So if you don't get every single solitary cell, which you usually don't, that cancer is going to spread. That takes us to why they have changed the definition of a cure. They changed it to 5-year survivability. That's what they call a cure. So here I want to take you back and make it clear as to what they're doing. You've taken that site where that tumor was out. So you've gotten rid of those 4 billion cancer cells. But there are other cancer cells, and they might have spread to the liver, to the lymph nodes, to wherever, because you did your surgery. And now what's going to happen is you're going to have five sites, that, theoretically, that might be harboring cancer cells that are going to start to multiply. And in 90 days, that one is two. In a year, that those two are a million. And in 5 years, you know, you've got raging cancer in four or five places in your body. So they never cure the cancer. They just remove the cancer from the site because they're doing nothing to affect the root cause of the cancer. Now let's go to the next modality. I worked for Atomic Energy of Canada, and I sold radiation therapy equipment. And I happened one day to be on site with some gentlemen who were dealing with some isotopes, and there was an accident. We all had to go get tested. And basically, they were afraid that I didn't get a very big exposure, but that a couple of these men might be sterile. So immediately, I kind of got exposed to the dangers of cancer. And so one of the things that happens with the radiation therapy is it kills all the cells. It's not discriminated. It kills the good cells. It kills the bad cells. It kills the bone marrow in your bones so that you can't produce the white blood cells. It breaks down your body's immune system. And so now, let's say you even went down to the Gerson Clinic and you got the treatment that I'm talking about, all of a sudden now your body is much less able to participate in the cure because your body's immune system is down. So what I would say is, I'm not a doctor. I have to put this disclaimer in. You should go to a doctor. You should get a recommendation from a doctor. But what I'm saying is, or two doctors, don't just rush, because what I want to go back to is how long it takes that cancer to grow. And so if they cut out a site, it's going to come back, because I'm almost going to guarantee you, I'll give you survival rates for 5 year survival rates for a multitude of cancers in a minute. And they don't cure them. They just cut the site out, and it just takes 4 or 5 years for it to metastasize to a large enough lump to be found in another part of the body. So basically, now we've basically talked about surgery, and we've talked about radiation, and what radiation does is it might get rid of the lump in that site, but then what happens is you can get secondary, maybe you get leukemia because of the exposure to the radiation, or maybe you become sterile. So radiation, you know, is if it can cause cancer, is it really a good way to cure cancer? Because even if it attacks that cancer, it can very frequently cause another type of cancer. And so then we go to chemotherapy, and chemotherapy is just the most heinous poison in the world. It can cause your brain to shrink. It can cause you to get a whole litany of diseases and can basically destroy your immune system. Here, I'm going to read off, there's probably 75 things that chemotherapy can do to your body. And I want to read off just a few. It can kill the bone marrow in your body, and that means that basically you can't produce any more white blood cells. It can destroy the lining of the intestines. It can lead to toxicity that can literally kill you. What else here? Immune system damage. It leads to increased infections. It can damage the nervous system. It can lead to neuropathy. It can lead to leukemia. And I could go on and on and on and on. I mean,
so what you're really saying is that we need to take control of our own health care and not just go to a doctor and rely on what they say. Research, educate yourself, and take control of it and use alternative methods.
Yes, and I'm saying, most importantly, what I'm trying to say is you have time, because it's not as rapidly growing as they think, as they tell you it is. You have time to do that research. And here's another thing that I want to advise the people of. They play with the statistics. If you go in here, I'll try to give you a theoretical example. If they're going to get one of those 40 chemotherapy drugs approved, they have to go through clinical trials, right? And remember now, the very people who are doing the clinical trials are writing the protocols, and they're funding the FDA. So you have to ask yourself right off the bat how legitimate those trials are. But basically, they do the trials, and there's just some incredible things that happen. If you had there's two numbers that we have to deal with, and when you go to your doctor, anybody who's listening who has cancer or has a friend who has cancer, I want you to write this down. It's real simple. Write down absolute benefit and write relative benefit. and I'm going to show you the games that they play. If they had a woman who had breast cancer, and they gave her one of those, one of the medicines that they've approved, they would have some statistics. And let's say hypothetically that they said that they expected, if they didn't give this medicine to somebody, that in that population that had had breast cancer, that two in a hundred would have a reoccurrence of breast cancer within the next 5 years. Now, they give this medicine to the people, and they find that there's a reduction of one. Instead of two people getting breast cancer, only one gets breast cancer. Now, if you guys want to kind of try to jump in here and play a guessing game, one person was spared getting cancer by going on this disease. In a numerical fashion, what do you think they claim as the benefit, the percentage of benefit that the patients receive, that patient population receive from taking that drug?
Yeah, I really don't know what that percentage is.
Well, here's what happens. They take 1 divided by 2, which equals 50%. So they say since we had a reduction of 1, we only expected 2 people to get it, 1 got it, we've got a miracle drug. We've got a drug that reduced the reoccurrence of cancer by 50%.
So what they're doing is putting out fallacious findings.
It's their defining terms. They define a cure, not as the absolute disappearance of a disease, never to return, but that disease, that you're still alive at the end of 5 years. You can be on oxygen, you can have a breathing tube down your throat like my father-in-law had, but if you can take a breath in 5 years, you're cured of cancer. You're on the statistical side that says you survived cancer for 5 years. So here's the number that you want to look at. You want to go to your doctor, and you want to challenge him, and you want to say, I'm not interested in what the absolute value is for whatever medicine you're talking about giving me. I want to know what the relative benefit is. Now, here's the difference. If you had those same 100 patients, you had the same exact statistics where you expected to not get cancer, and you reduced that number by 1, here's what it really means. You had a 1% reduction, not a 50% reduction. And now let's go to another term. You know what a placebo is? A sugar pill? It's something that's
right.
Given to people in blind studies that has absolutely no medical benefit. Well, what's the definition of a placebo? I'll tell you. I just said that hypothetically. Any substance that's given to a person for the benefit of inducing a medical improvement that doesn't show 30% or more improvement is considered to be a placebo, a sugar pill, or basically a nothing. So when you've got a medicine that in reality only had a 1% improvement rate, they're calling it a 50% improvement rate because they're playing with the numbers, but it only had a 1% improvement rate, then there's no wonder that they can't define cure based on the absence of the disease, because the disease never went away. Because what's happening is, remember, you're cutting it and in surgery, and now it's spreading. And now let's go to the chemotherapy a second, and I want to compare that to the herbicidal industry or to bacteria. If you get a bacterial infection and you take an antibiotic, the doctors will always tell you, take it to the very end because we want to kill every single solitary bacteria. Why? Because if we don't, we will get bacteria that become resistant, and now those bacteria will be harder to kill in the future, and they're going to multiply, and we're going to have more problems than we had before. Now let's go to herbicides. If you've got a herbicide and you're trying to kill some insect population, and you put that herbicide on, what's going to happen is some small percentage of those insects are not going to be killed by that particular herbicide. They're going to become resistant to that herbicide, and then they're going to come back with a vengeance, because when you apply that herbicide next time, they're going to be immune to it, and now you're going to have a worse problem than you had before. It's even worse when you're dealing with chemotherapy, because what happens, now, Dolly, I'll go to the example that you gave. It was your husband, you said, who had the cancer, right?
Right, and the cancer actually grew at an enormous rate under chemotherapy.
Okay, I wanted to kind of give you a little bit of idea of why it grew in the chemotherapy. First of all, they give you a particular treatment, a methodology. They put you on chemotherapy. Unless they're monitoring you very, very carefully, here's what happens. It's just like in the two examples that I just gave. It starts off, and it starts to kill some cancer cells and good cells. But at some point in time, the cancer becomes immune. And if they don't find the appropriate chemotherapy drug to replace it with, now that cancer has become immune, and now that cancer grows at an even faster rate, just like the herbicide with the insects and just like the bacteria with the antibiotics. So if they can't kill it all, what's left becomes resistant and becomes even more viral. And then there's a couple of other things to take into consideration. They don't tell you anything about diet. When you go and they give you the treatments, they don't say change your diet at all. But basically, there's another factor that may come into play in the instance of certain patients, not all, but it can basically be a situation where that can explain rapid cancer growth in certain patients. What it is within the food additives industry, we have monosodium glutamate, which is a taste enhancer. And that monosodium glutamate creates something called excitotoxins. And those excitotoxins create free radicals. I won't go into the whole lineage, but basically in the instance of a cancer patient, here's what those excitotoxins do. They feed the cancer, and the cancer can grow more rapidly. So if a patient takes in an excessive amount of sugar, or if he takes in foods that have a large amount of monosodium glutamate in it, it's been proven that those two substances can cause the cancer to grow more rapidly. Now, because the government is so kind to us to make sure that everything is labeled appropriately, we can't even tell if we're taking in monosodium glutamate, because the food industry has figured out that it's not particularly good for us. And so what they've done is they no longer, in many instances, call it monosodium glutamate. It can be called by 15 or 20 different names. So if you're eating processed foods, you can't even go to the label and say, oh, I'm not going to eat monosodium glutamate. So the only answer for a cancer patient in this instance is to not have processed foods, which again takes us back to holistic medicine. And now I want to bring in another component of not only cancer, but of wellness in general. If you're in a laboratory and you're doing scientific study, basically you can run a very simple laboratory experiment, and here's what they do. They take a petri dish, and they put bacteria in two different petri dishes. And one petri dish is high in acid. The other petri dish has got an alkaline base. And what you'll find 100% of the time is there's your threshold. It's about 7.4 pH. And if you put that bacteria in a petri dish that is sufficiently alkaline, the bacteria will not grow. But if you put that bacteria in a petri dish that has an acid environment, it will grow. And so that's one of the other aspects of health, of overall wellness, that they don't tell us. And our diets that we eat, our Western diets, tend to create an acidity level in the body that is harmful. And so it creates an environment in which bacteria can grow. And so if we were to go on prescribed diets and eat correctly and cut out some of the things that we need to cut out, we can change the pH in our body, and we can actually prevent illnesses in many instances, or wellness. And the Obama plan is in no way, shape, or form in any regard directed at wellness. It's only designed to treat you once you become ill. And what it really does is none of these medicines go to the cause. They only treat the symptom, and when they put you on them, you're then often on them for the rest of your life. And so it's the most horrible scam I can think of. Well, let me stop for a second and redirect me.
Drugs do have side effects, because my late husband, God bless him, took an arthritis drug, diagnosed 39 with severe osteoarthritis equivalent at that time to an 81-year-old man. Well, he had operation after operation, and he took one particular drug that without it he couldn't walk. He had bone on bone, and I still think that drug killed him because one of the side effects were possibly liver and pancreas, and I still think that drug killed him.
Well, I mean, I can't say, and I'm not a doctor, so I wouldn't even try to say, but the whole point that I've been trying to get across here is when in the time that I spent going into surgery, scrubbing in and seeing cases, and the time that I spent selling radiation therapy equipment, talking to surgeons, talking to radiologists, and seeing patients, I started to see that those patients weren't being cured. They were coming back again with the same cancers. And when you look at breast cancer, I mean, the typical scenario is a woman gets breast cancer, she gets a partial or a full mastectomy, and they give her whatever other treatments they're going to give her, and she comes back in 5 years and she has cancer. Here, let me run you through some statistics. The 5-year survival rate for bladder cancer, these are some of the more common, is 0%. The 5-year survival rate for kidney, 0%. For multiple melanoma, 0%. For melanoma, 0%. For pancreas, 0%. For soft tissue, sacrum, 0%. And it goes on and on and on. There's only just a few, 4 or 5 cancers that we have any really significant success rate on. Hodgkin's, 40.3%. Testes, 37.7%. Cervix, 12%. But for the vast, vast majority, stomach cancer, colon cancer, breast cancer, uterus cancer, the percentages are anywhere from 0 to 1 to 2%.
So what can we do? What can we do as a people to cut down those percentage rates for us?
Well, I think the bottom line is you don't just automatically let them cut you. You don't let them automatically give you radiation therapy or chemotherapy. You go back to what I said, that cancer is growing slower than what they've told you. It was already 10 years old in your body. And what the people on the holistic side will tell you, and what I guess I'm saying is, don't rush to do what they say. Stop, take a breath, do some research, find out the facts, and then decide what you're going to do from an informed viewpoint. Don't treat your doctor like a god and just do what he tells you to do.
Well, a friend of mine had kidney cancer, and they took out one kidney at the University of Chicago, and they explained to this is about 4 years ago, and they explained to him that diet was very important. To avoid red meat, to avoid animal fats, and to avoid fast foods. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's correct. But I would imagine he did receive surgery, right?
Right.
So what they will do, as far as they will go, is you must receive one of their standard modalities, because you have to understand that there's huge money in radiation therapy, huge money in surgery.
No, he never took any kind of radiation therapy. He refused it. He didn't take any kind. And because of that, so far, he's had no reoccurrence. But I encouraged him, do not take chemo or radiation. It will only grow. So he refused it.
Well, here's my point. If you go through those treatments first, it's either spread or it's you've now compromised your immune system. So now if you decide to go to a holistic treatment, your body is not able to participate in the healing process the way it should, because your immune system is compromised and the cancer has spread. So the chances of the holistic approach working for you is greatly reduced. So if you'll just stop, step back, don't treat the doctor like a god, recognize that we've got collusion going on by the FDA, the American Cancer Society, the pharmaceutical companies, and all basically looking at the almighty dollar. And if you go do your research, I think you'll probably conclude on your own that you have enough time to go get treatment. And here's the marvelous thing about it. If you went down to the Gerson Clinic, for example, what you'd find is you only have to stay 1 to 3 weeks. You don't have any of the side effects. They send you home. They put you on the diet. And basically, you start to either feel better or you don't. But it's very, very quick. The turnaround times on starting to heal is very fast. And you're going to know. I'm getting better. I feel better. I'm stronger. I'm no longer nauseous, whatever. Just take the time to go investigate for the sake of your life, for the sake of your loved one, and then if you decide to go the other route, fine. But if you just do what the doctor tells you to do, if you look at those survival rates that I read you off a minute ago, I mean, that's not very promising. And if you look at the way they skew the numbers so that a 1% reduction in the reoccurrence of a cancer is called a 50% reduction, you know, you just can't trust people who are bantering around those kind of statistics and are doing those kinds of things to us. Another little quick story is I asked this question of my teenage son and of some other younger people, and to my amazement, they didn't even know who I was talking about, so I hope you guys do. Do you know who Albert Schweitzer is?
Well, of course.
Okay. I've heard the name
before. Why don't you tell the audience, and then I'll chime in with why I bring him up.
Well, Albert Schweitzer, I just know who Albert Schweitzer is, a pioneer in medicine, is that correct?
Well, yeah, but he was the man who went to Africa, and he disappeared into the depths of Africa for years, and he was a doctor, and he was basically, you know, just heralded as, you know, as an absolute selfless person who went to the darkest reaches of Africa and cured people. Well, he got sugar diabetes. His wife got skin tuberculosis, and his daughter had some kind of a skin ailment. I'm not sure what it was. Well, they knew Dr. Gerson. Dr. Gerson cured his type 2 diabetes and cured his wife's tuberculosis and cured his daughter's unknown skin ailment. And then Albert Schweitzer wrote of Gerson that he was the most eminent genius in medical history. And this man had thousands of proven cures, and yet the American Medical Association, in concert with the FDA, in concert with the Cancer Institute of America, in concert with the pharmaceutical companies, drove him out of this country. And now if you want to get the Gerson therapy, you have to go to Mexico to get it.
That stands to reason, because he didn't fall in line with the pharmaceutical companies. Larry, I think this has been extremely enlightening for me, and I'm sure it has been for others. And I hate to leave early tonight, but my sister is very ill, and my niece just called me, so I need to call and see what happens.
Well, okay. I hope everything is okay. I'll be praying
for
you tonight.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you both later.
Thank
bye-bye,
you, Dolly.
Mike. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Dolly. Bye-bye. Hope everything's all right.
Are we going to go on and just wrap up at the end, or you want to wrap now since Dolly's gone?
We've got 6 minutes left.
Are you going to finish the show out?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, then, I found another quote that I'll read you. This is a quote from the FDA. It's from a gentleman by the name of Herbert Lay. He was a former commissioner of the FDA. So what I find with these people is, no matter what branch of the government I'm talking about, they put in their 20 years or their 30 years, but when they get out, then they become whistleblowers. Anyway, here's what he said now. Once he had left the FDA, he says, "The thing that bugs me is that people think that the FDA is protecting them. It isn't. What the FDA is doing and what the public thinks it is doing are as different as night and day." So there's a testimony telling us, you know, basically that the FDA is just as I said, they're not working in the behest of the American people. They're basically there to work on the behest of the chemical companies. And, you know, I want to kind of change the subject just a little bit for a second, because I want to talk about a couple of other things that go back to more or less our earlier shows. But since we're talking about food and we're talking about the drug companies, I want to bring in the chemical companies for just a second, and I want to warn the American people about another problem that I'd like to have people try to get active about. And in that case, I'm going to bring up Bayer and Monsanto and Dow as three of the big perpetrators in this instance. And it's just amazing to me that God has seen to it that over a 30-year period, he has placed me every place I needed to be placed in order to address the most important issues facing this country. So in this case, I worked for Monsanto Chemical Company as a youth. I worked in radiation therapy. I sold surgical supplies. And I also was involved in the real estate industry, and I'm a licensed broker in the real estate industry. And I was involved in 5 acquisitions and mergers. But with Monsanto and Dow and Bayer, here's what I want to tell you. They are genetically engineering foods. And in the light of cancer, what I want to disclose is that there's scientific evidence that clearly shows us that you can take a food that is absolutely harmless to us, and once it has been genetically engineered, it can cause disease. It can even be lethal. There are certain instances in which that genetically engineered food has been known to create something called benzene, which is considered to be a very, very serious carcinogen. And so what basically these companies are is they are herbicidal companies. They're chemical companies. And they're trying to take over our agricultural industry, so it's just like the healthcare industry. And they've basically got into the grains right now. They haven't gone, you know, all that far. And so what I want to do is signal the American population that we need to stop them. But right now, here's what they do. Let's use wheat as an example. If you get your wheat seed from Monsanto, they have a terminator gene that they put in it, so that terminator gene is not going, it will produce corn at the end of the season, but it will not reproduce the following year if that same seed is put into the ground. And so you become dependent on getting your grain from Monsanto. Now, what's even worse is if these genetically engineered grains are planted, the pollen will blow from field to field. So when they do their marketing, they look at the wind patterns. So this is true in Canada, in the United States, and elsewhere. And in the northern hemisphere, most of our wind comes from the northwest and blows to the southeast. And so they make their greatest efforts to sell their genetically engineered grains to the west coast, so that basically they'll blow the pollen towards the east, and then the grains that farmers have planted in other fields that are not genetically engineered are contaminated. Now, with that, here's what Monsanto is doing. Monsanto is a very wealthy company, and they're going out and they're basically trying to buy the grain supplies of the world, and they're trying to patent as many of them as they can, which ought to be absolutely illegal. As far as I'm concerned, you should not be able to patent a food, and they're basically trying to withhold the seed grains from the world so that what they can do is they can take the vast variety of seed grains that are available and reduce it down so that we become highly dependent on the genetic engineered grains that they supply us, grains that may not necessarily be all that healthy for us. But basically, if you take the potato famine in Ireland, for example, if one of those genetically engineered foods were to become blighted and we don't have a very diverse, you know, bio crop like we would in nature, because Monsanto has got involved or Dow has got involved and the amount of seed grains that we have, the diversity has been greatly reduced, we could be looking at worldwide famine. And so that's another area that I think people need to be cognizant of, and you need to be getting politically involved to make sure that we do not allow that progression in that direction to take place. So with that, we're just about to the end. Mike, do you have any questions of me as we begin to wrap up?
No, sir. That was very informative, and I believe we're going to continue this next week. This is part one of the Empire Evil series, and we're going to go into part two next week.
Well, actually, Mike, let me correct you. I got a hold of you, but I wasn't able to get a hold of you over the holiday. This was actually something I snuck in, and it kind of is the Empire of Evil, but it's specifically on cancer, on health, on generic engineered foods. I wasn't able, I think you know, my computer crashed. I haven't got it back yet. And so until I get my computer, I don't have my research material in order to do that Empire of Evil. So basically, I think this probably is just a one-off show for right now. This happens to be research that I had, because this is the next book that I'm going to write. The next book that I'm writing is on this subject, and so I just thought I'd bring it forward, because I believe that that millions of Americans need to know that diabetes can be cured, that cancer can be cured. And then another one that I think I want you to understand, I didn't get into this, let me close on this. We were talking about acid and alkaline in the body. When you have a diet that creates excess acid in the body, it damages soft tissue in the body. And one of the areas that it affects, it could damage the arteries that are in the heart. And they've now got some, it's not mainstream reported, because, again, it goes against the profit margins of these big pharmaceutical companies. But in the Contra literature, there are certainly clear indications that if you change your pH, that you can cause healing in those arteries in the heart. And so there's evidence that we can impact, to some degree, heart disease, that the Gerson Institute claims, and I've heard testimonies from a large number of patients that say that they've been cured of stage 2 diabetes, and thousands of cases of people who've been cured, cured, not a 5-year survival, but cured from cancer. And so as we close this, what I'd say to kind of wrap up is take time, do your research, do your study, don't let them force you into treatment that's going to compromise your immune system until you've done your research. And then if you decide to go with what the doctors, you know, tell you to do, I wish you the best of luck. But if you decide to go with the alternate therapy, at least you'll be going with the maximum chance of survival, because your immune system won't have been compromised.
Well, I really don't see any harm. I don't see any harm in eating right and doing what the doctor told you, unless you're suggesting not to do what the doctor told you.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you get the radiation therapy and the chemotherapy, it compromises your immune system. So now, if the survival rates are next to zero for almost all of the major cancers. So now, if you decide that it's not working and you want to go get holistic treatment, your immune system is shot because that radiation therapy is not discriminate, and neither is the chemotherapy. And so now it's killing good cells and bad cells. It's killing white blood cells. It's compromising your immune system. And so effectively, the chances of that treatment being effective is substantially reduced. So what I'm saying is, think before you leap. Stop. Take the time, do the research, because the opposite of what you just said is true, Mike. If you go forward with those treatments, they will impair your body's ability to participate in the healing process. And it's just like those herbicides, like Dolly said, if you take that chemotherapy, at some point in time, that cancer is going to become immune to that particular chemotherapy drug, and they're going to have to change you to another one in all probability. And if they don't get the mix right, you're going to be worse off than you were when you started. So I'm just trying to say, you know, don't just trust your doctor as if he's God. You've got time, because of the, like I said, most cancers are 10 years old when they're actually discovered. Step back, take time, do the research. Don't just rely on what your doctor says. I'm not saying don't listen to him, but I'm saying if you at least ask him what the what if he's going to give you a drug, go back and do what I said. Ask him, is it an absolute number or is it a relative number? Did 50% of the people really benefit, or was it a 1% benefit, like I talked about in the example that I gave earlier? So I don't mean to contradict you, but I think maybe, you know, what I was saying, you know, wasn't coming across as clearly as I hoped it would have. I know that it's actually past 7:00, so I don't know what's happening to this broadcast now. So let me let you come back in and either close this out or ask another question or take us wherever you want to take us.
Well, also when we run out of time, like when we schedule it for an hour, and when we use up that hour, also really happens is we continue to record on the podcast, what will become a podcast. Mm-hmm. We continue recording, but it's not streaming live anymore. So when we start at 6:00, we're streaming, so people can tune in, you know, turn on, you know, click the website, and they can actually hear us live, and that's when they know to call in, and they can contribute their questions, comments, concerns, whatever. After that, you know, the show stops streaming an hour later. We can schedule one for up to 2 hours, but I usually just go for an hour. And
okay, I don't think I've got 2 hours worth of information that I want to impart right now, but let me kind of close with I was talking about Monsanto a minute ago, and I was talking about the genetic engineering. But these two quotes I want to read go beyond that. They kind of speak to the FDA. And remember, I gave you a quote a minute ago that said the FDA wasn't our friend. So here's a quote from Monsanto Chemical Company, and I want you to just think about the arrogance of it. This is coming from a community relations director at Monsanto, a person named Hill I'm trying to see how to pronounce his name. I can't read my handwriting. Argello, I think it is, of the New York Times on October 25, 1998. So he said that Monsanto should not have to vouch for the safety of biotech food. Our interest is in selling as much as possible. Assuring its safety is the FDA's job. Now, does that in any way sound reasonable, that a food that goes into our body that can either benefit us or greatly harm us because it's been genetically engineered should not be the responsible of the manufacturer of that genetically altered food to prove that it's safe? I think that's ridiculous.
Why are they altering the food genetically? I mean, you said they're trying to do that so that they can everybody has to buy that particular sort of grain. They can't grow their own. Is that what that is?
There's two reasons, basically. When you look at these bioengineered foods, it's really interesting. They're made by chemical companies. And what do chemical companies make when they're involved in the agricultural industry? They make herbicides. So it's like what I was saying earlier. They then make these grains and that are genetically engineered, and they are much more resistant to, guess what, herbicides. So what it means is that they can spray more herbicides and spray for insects and basically do something else that we really need to be cognizant of. They can turn their backs on organic food, and there's plenty of literature out there also on this, folks, that basically will tell you that we don't need to be anywhere near as dependent on herbicides as we are. That organic fruit production can, in many instances, yield higher yields than from fields that have been contaminated with artificial fertilizers and been contaminated with herbicides. So basically, part of the answer to your question, Mike, is the crop becomes better able to sustain larger amounts of herbicides. The second thing is that by putting this gene terminator in, 80% of the farmers in the world today, here's what they do in their farming process. They'll plant a field of, let's say, wheat or a field of corn. At the end of the year, they sell off the vast majority of their crop and they get their cash. But what they do is they keep a percentage of that crop as seed for next year, and then they plant that seed as the byproduct of the previous year's yield. Well, with these genetically engineered foods, now they have a terminator gene in them, and that food can be sold, but those seeds will not germinate next year. So think of it now. We have something that nature gave us that they should have absolutely no right to patent, and now those farmers are not able to get seed crop for next year. The only choice they have is to go back to a genetically engineered product from Monsanto Chemical Company or Dow or Bayer or whoever, but Monsanto is the big one in genetic engineering, and buy that seed from them. And then the other danger that I was pointing out is we might have, you know, 300 or 400 or 500 different foods that are capable of being produced for mass consumption around the world. But as Monsanto is buying up different seed grains, what they're going to do is they're going to restrict the amount of product that is available, the amount of diversity, the biodiversity of the grains and the foods, and that puts us in a severe situation if we ever get any disease that attacks one of those bioengineered foods, we don't have 300 other foods that we can fall back on, because we've now got a much smaller variety of foods that we're growing. That's very, very dangerous, and at some point in time it could lead to worldwide famine. Plus, just think of what happens when you get a monopoly on the production of food, Mike. I mean, that's absolutely horrible. Horrible to think that a manufacturer can take a food that God made and patent it and prevent us from being able to produce that food on our own without being dependent on them. So, I mean, I see that as horrible. Now, the other side of that quote, I read the quote about Monsanto a second ago, and what Monsanto was effectively saying in that is, we shouldn't have to be responsible for saying that our genetically engineered foods are safe. That's the job of the FDA. So now let's jump down, and I got another quote here. And this is just unbelievable. It says, ultimately, it is the food producer who is responsible for assuming safety. That's coming from the FDA. So which is it? Is it the FDA who's responsible, or is it the food producer who's responsible? Because guess what? Neither one is claiming responsibility, and then we've got the same situation that we had earlier, where we have to recognize the contamination of the process that's coming from the chain of money that started all the way back with the Rockefeller Group and flows through, and so it's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. So with that, I think I'm probably ready to close. If you are, Mike, if you want to stay a word or two here to kind of wrap up the session, I think I've kind of beat it up. If you have any other questions, though, I'll be happy to answer those before we adjourn.
No, you pretty much summed everything up. That's some pretty useful information there as well. You know, I kind of, even though I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on TV, you know, a lot of the stuff you said, you know, kind of like makes sense. And, you know, so, stuff that I kind of realized just using my own common sense. I never really had to deal with cancer or anything, but just basically, you know, like I drink and smoke. So, you know, I'm conscious of it. So, you know, I try to eat right, drink a lot of water, eat a lot of different colored vegetables, you know. And something you brought up last week, I think we were off the air when you brought it up, but juicing, like that Jack LaLanne juicer. That's excellent, you know. So
that's part of what the Gerson therapy is about. Let me kind of go back, and maybe I do want to close with this. There's several modalities that have been proven to be able to cure cancer, and I'm not going to try to go into all of them because I probably not qualified. But there are a couple that I have studied fairly extensively. One, it's probably not my first recommendation, but Robert Barefoot had some substantial success in curing cancer. He's got a couple of books out. One's called, let me see, maybe I can grab them here real quick. But basically, he advocates using coral calcium, which is high in minerals, and vitamin D, which is necessary in order to allow the body to assimilate that so that we can basically get the appropriate mineral balance in the body. It's called The Calcium Factor by Robert Barefoot, Barefoot, and he's an MD and a chemist, and he's had some success. Now, his approach is basically that he's changing the body from acid to alkaline, and in doing that, as I was saying before, then that makes the body a less hospitable host for disease. And also in the process, part of his modality increases oxygen within the body. So maybe I forgot to say this a minute ago. Here's one of the other scientific facts that they really pretty much can't repudiate. And they know that cancer is a unique organism, and that it's exactly the opposite of other healthy tissues. If you've got a healthy body, that body depends on being properly oxygenated. And if it's not oxygenated correctly, so say for the brain, for example, then brain cells begin to die, right? We all know that. So now if you've got cancer, what happens is cancer dies in a highly oxygenated environment. Cancer does best in an oxygen-deficient diet. So now that takes us back to the protein issue that we were talking about before. Here's why the protein becomes so critically important. When you're eating dead animal flesh, that animal flesh has no oxygen in it because it's dead. And when you're eating vegetables that have been either cooked or irradiated, the enzymes that are in them have been severely damaged by either microwaving it or by cooking it. And so basically you're not getting the full nutritional value. So when you get to a therapeutic level of using food as a cure for something like diabetes or something like cancer, you have to go to an extreme measure. So in this instance, part of the Gerson therapy requires juicing because you have to take in very large quantities of fresh live food, and you frankly couldn't eat that much, but you can consume it as juice. So now what happens, since that food has never been microwaved and never been cooked, it has all the enzymes and all the nutrients and all the minerals and the rinds and everything, and it is very high in oxygen because it's living food. So now the body becomes not only inseminated with the natural enzymes that it needs, and it becomes, it has the minerals that it needs and the nutrition that it needs, but it now also oxygenates the body, and that very oxygenation helps to kill the cancer. So basically those are the concepts behind those two methodologies. If they go to the web and do research, they'll find others. There's vitamin C therapy, for example, but I think in the research that I've done, these are the two most promising. Barefoot has another book called The Disease Conspiracy, and I probably should have mentioned the name of the Gerson book, but I can't remember it right this second, but you can just go on the web and type in the Gerson Institute, or Charlotte Gerson, here it is, Healing the Gerson Way. Now, that is a book that's been put out more recently by Charlotte Gerson. The book put out by her father was put out about 50 years ago, and I frankly don't recommend it for the lay person. It was done for the medical community, and what it was detailed medical case studies of 50 people, and here's what's interesting. They were all people who were told by conventional medicine, go home and die, and those people all lived once they went on the Gerson therapy, and their bodies were able to regenerate, their immune systems were able to kick in, the pancreas was allowed to do what it was supposed to do, which was to kill the protein membrane around the cancer cell, which then allowed the white blood cells of the body to kill the cancer. So the natural immune system of the body was able to take over, and people were able to be cured. And the reason I wanted to do this, this particular show, is because I just think there are millions and millions and millions of people out there who could hear this, who could basically have their lives saved, and at the minimum, they could extend their lives without having the pain and the agony and the suffering that they're going to have to go through if they go through chemotherapy, because chemotherapy is considered a biohazard, and the things that it does to your body are just unbelievable. So with that, Mike, I think I've probably given you pretty much the big picture. If you have any last questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, I think I'm kind of ready to wrap for tonight. Anything else?
All right, well, thank you very much, Larry. I really appreciate it. You can be found at libertycrusade.com.
That's correct, libertycrusade.com. And by the way, since we're kind of halfway off the air, I mailed you those books we talked about. You might not have gotten them because of the Christmas holidays, but I'm sure they'll be showing up at your door any day.
Well, thank you very much, Larry. I really appreciate that. I will most definitely read them. Did you remember to sign them?
Yes, I certainly did. And I'll be talking to you Friday, and I'll get a hold of Dolly to let her know my computer situation and what our topic for next week's show is going to be.
All right. Great, Larry. Thank you very much.
You have a nice evening. I'll talk to you next week.
You too. Thank you very much, Larry.
And basically,
that was Larry Bell, everybody, from... What's that?
I said, basically, as I close, I want to say this to people. I'm a unique individual in that I absolutely, emphatically believe in God. And there is one last thing I wanted to bring in. I just forgot it, Mike, so I apologize. There's one last component of this that I want to really, really want to bring out. And that is that I'm a spiritual believer in God and it's the kingdom that he created. And what I find is when they go and you get conventional therapy and you see that people who are taking the chemotherapy along with you are dying, and you see, you know, that they tell you that you have, you know, you can extend your life a few more months, but you're going to have all of these horrible side effects. It does things to your psyche. If you go down to one of these clinics, you'll see people who are being treated who are not having the side effects, the nausea and all the negativity. Plus, you'll find that what you're going to get, which is very important, Cancer Institutes of America is the only place in the United States that I know that does any of this, is you need to be praising God. You need to be thanking Him for a cure. You need to be laughing. You need to be praying. You need to be doing everything you can do in order to create a positive environment in your body, because scientifically, the last thing that kicks in here is that when you have a positive attitude, it affects all of the glands in your body. It affects all the hormones, which you get, coming back to that natural healing process of allowing the body to be a participant in your healing. And so I believe in God, and I believe that this is the way God intended us to be healed. He intended us to be whole and well. He didn't intend for poisonous medicines to be used to cure us. They don't cure. All they do is mask the side effects and make us lifelong drug addicts. I believe wholeheartedly that the answer is in doing exactly what God designed us to do, and that is to use food as the cure. So with that, I'm going to say goodnight, and I'm going to say God bless everyone. Bye. Talk to you next week.
God bless you as well, there. Okay, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week, Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central. And that's Larry Ballard, everybody, LibertyCrusade.com.